I'm standing in a hole, a 300-foot deep hole to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have three times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Done. The new Sprint Direct Connect with three times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. Two-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income part or full-time with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
And now, the show that covers politics from all angles, Inside Politics with David Califf.
You are Inside Politics with David Califf, the show that covers issues that affect you. Hope everybody's having a great Tuesday evening. We've got a great Tuesday show lined up for you on this Tuesday edition of Inside Politics. But first, our In the Headlines section, a new report came out from the GAO Government Accountability Office regarding the tax rate corporations are paying today. And according to the report by the GAO, corporations are paying a lower tax rate than you, the average. In the average middle-class family. According to the GAO report, corporations are paying a 12.6% rate. There's something wrong about corporations paying less in taxes in terms of their tax rates than you do. They're paying lower than Mitt Romney. But enough of them. But tonight, it's all about college student loans. And as many of you have heard, yesterday, July 1st, the deadline for Congress to act on reauthorizing student loan interest rates staying at 3.4%. Just like everything else in Washington these days, Congress failed to act and they did nothing. And all thanks to Congress not acting to help millions of college loan borrowers, student loan interest rates have doubled as of yesterday from 3.4% to 6.8%. This could add close to as much as $1,000 over the span of a loan. The duration, $1,000, that might not mean a lot to John Boehner or Mitch McConnell or other politicians. But, you know, that $1,000, that means a lot to you. That means a lot to the average middle class, average American family. And what we saw on Monday was wrong. It was another example of Congress not for you, the instead, not doing the lack of work for you, the American people, and there was no clear example of what we saw yesterday on July 1st. And all thanks to Congress, student loan interest rates doubled yesterday. And joining us on this topic is David Cooper with the Economic Policy Institute. And hello, David. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Thanks for having me, David.
Well, it's a pleasure, and a light name there. And you're with the EPI Economic Policy Institute. And for our listeners, a little bit about the work that you do at EPI.
Sure. So the Economic Policy Institute is a nonprofit nonpartisan research center in Washington, D.C. that that studies the economy and tries to develop and promote policies that will help living conditions for working class and middle class Americans.
And I'm sure you've been following, EPI has been following this deadline for student loan interest rates. And for our listeners, a little bit of some background. I believe it was reauthorized last year, and then 12 months, the deadline came up on yesterday, and they failed to reach that deadline.
That's right. So the student loan interest rate, this actually started back in 2007 when Senator Ted Kennedy and Senator George Miller from California passed this bill known as the Cost Reduction and Access Act, and that lowered the student loan rate down to the 4% that they were at up until yesterday. But the way that the bill was structured, you know, Congress does this a lot. They have to have the sunsetting of these bills. So last year, the rate was supposed to go back up to 6.8%. Congress at that time was able to come up with a fix to extend those lower rates for another year. But now we've reached that deadline again, and unfortunately this time, unable to get anything done, let the flip. Now we've got interest rates that are twice as high as they used to be.
And for these borrowers, student loan borrowers, what's going to be the impact? I was reading where it could be as much as $1,000 or loan duration.
Well that's actually the average increase for the average borrower over the life loan. It could actually be even higher. Someone who's borrowing the maximum amount for the full duration is almost $3,000. For that person. So this is a significant expense, particularly for the low-income borrowers that these loans are designed to help.
Wow. This is going to have a huge impact because there's millions of college graduates, millions of student loan borrowers that are going to be affected by this.
That's right, there is. And everyone recognizes that college education is the best investment that any individual can make to sort of better their own lot in life. But it's also a great investment for our country to make. You know, higher education is a public good. We all benefit from having a better educated workforce. These are the students, the workers of tomorrow. We want them to be to have the best access to the best education that they can get. And what Congress did yesterday was basically say that we're not going to make those investments, that we're going to let things get harder for students to better themselves and to better the country.
And what does it say about the Congress today that just a couple of months ago they acted swiftly when there were airport delays due to the sequester and the sequester furloughs and automatic cuts to the FAA? And there were airport delays and flights that particularly impacted the wealthiest citizens. But yet here you have something that impacts people of all incomes, all backgrounds, and they failed to act, but they acted swiftly when it came to the airport delays.
Yeah, you know, I think what you're getting at, David, is this feeling that I think a lot of people have that Congress is only looking out for a select few. They're only looking out for themselves and sort of the wealthiest, those with the best connections to Congress. And you know, students, unfortunately, don't have the same political clout that some of these other groups have. And that's why I think it's so critical, you know, to stand up and talk about these things and take action. And that, you know, the country as a whole needs to raise their voices on this issue because, like I said, education is a public good. We want our young people to be able to get the best education that they can get, and we're really shooting ourselves in the foot as a country if we're making it harder for students to go to college and educate themselves.
And there were some plans from some different senators some plans to try to get this deadline from passing. And I know one of those plans from a couple senators was to close these tax loopholes that some corporations, including oil corporations, have benefited from. But it seems like there were many that said no to that plan.
That's right. There was a plan. There's a number of plans that were put forward, both in the House and the Senate. And in the Senate, they actually had 51 votes to pass a plan that would have extended these rates for another year, which, you know, obviously we all want to deal with good, but at least passing it for another year would have given Congress time to work out the details and hopefully come up with a fix for the long term. And it would have been budget neutral. In other words, it wouldn't have increased the deficit because they were going to close those tax loopholes. Corporations and oil companies and a few other to cover that additional cost. Unfortunately, because of the way the Senate has worked these days, a majority of votes, 51 votes, was not enough to break a Republican filibuster, so they weren't able to pass that. In the House, on the other hand, they did pass something, but the House Republican bill actually was worse. It would have made things worse off than just letting the interest rates double like they did. So, you know, I guess we can be grateful for that blessing that things weren't made worse by the House Republican plan, but still, the interest rate doubling is not...
Yeah, not good at all. And there were some different plans that were put in place, including the president's plan, and had some similarities with some of the other plans as well.
Yeah, so the president's plan, what that would have done was basically taken the interest rate, and I'm going to get a little bit technical here, so bear with, would have tied it the 10-year Treasury bill rate, which is, you know, based upon market conditions, whatever the Treasury has to pay in interest on some of its borrowing, and would have added a little bit on top of that to cover administrative costs. The bottom line is that for current borrowers, it would have actually been a lower rate than, or it would have been right around the 3.4% that the rate was at today, and it would have been budget neutral. It wouldn't have added anything to the deficit, and students would have been able to borrow like they have been for a long time. But unfortunately, you know, the president's plan, with the dysfunction that we have in Congress, that didn't go anywhere also.
Wow. Well, in all the plans that you saw, I know the House, the GOP plan was that you don't agree with as well, but out of the plans that you saw, is there one that you thought was the best option out of the plans?
Well, you know, there were some, the president's plan certainly has some good elements. You know, his plan overall would lower the cost for anyone who was borrowing today. Whichever student loans you were taking out, his plan would have been good. Senator Warren put forward a plan that would have allowed students to borrow at 0.75%, which is the rate that banks can borrow from the Federal Reserve when they need an emergency, like we saw a few years ago in the financial crisis. So, you know, Senator Warren, I think, has a good moral argument that students should be able to borrow at the same rates that these big, highly profitable banks are borrowing at. Now, her plan was just for 1 year, and so we'd have to figure out what to do again at that point. There was also a plan in the Senate. Some other senators, Senator Reid from Rhode Island, had a plan to basically tie the interest rate to those Treasury bills, but then say that the additional cost to cover the overhead would be determined by the Secretary of Education. So basically, whatever it actually costs the government to administer these loans, that's what the interest rate would be. And that's, you know, that seems like a reasonable proposal to me as well. So there are some good elements, but unfortunately, even these good plans aren't going anywhere in the Congress we have today.
And they didn't reach the deadline, and doesn't surprise us with this Congress, but is there any movement to I know there's been some talk about possibly next week, week after, any movement to try to, even though they missed a deadline, get something passed quickly?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that there is a pretty strong sense that they need to do something about this. A vast majority of Americans understand this. The latest polling was something like 80% or 88% of Americans agree that we shouldn't be letting these rates go up like they have. And the good news is that because it's the middle of the summer, there's probably not too many students who are taking out loans right now. We've got maybe a couple months to fix this before most of the students have to take out new loans in the fall. So we've got a little bit of time, a little window of time to get something done, and it's just come down. down to whether Congress can actually get its act together and do something.
And this doesn't apply to people who get loans after Monday, after July 1st, just retroactively before July 1st?
Well, the opposite, actually. So this only applies to people getting new loans. So
new loans,
anyone who already has student loans, it doesn't affect those loans at all.
Okay, so this would be just a new loan borrowers. And, you know, as you mentioned, 80% are against this, Congress not acting on this, and how it affects the American people, the American family, and these borrowers. And yet we saw very little media coverage. According to Media Matters, only 13 segments on this topic since late May.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there hasn't been more talk about this. You know, as you raised earlier, unfortunately, the student lobby is not exactly a strong lobby compared to what, you know, corporations can spend in Washington. So it's funny that you're not hearing more about this, but I certainly, as new school year approaches, people are hopefully going to get a little more vocal about this. The other thing I'll say is that there is a lot of recognition now that huge student loan debt is really holding back the recovery and is really holding back economic growth. There's over, I believe it's over $1.1 trillion in total student loan debt in the country right now. That's more than there is for auto loans and for credit card debt. And so when you have so many people who are carrying such huge student loan debt, you know, this is a major public issue. We need to try and do something. Congress needs to take action to prevent, you know, further expanding this huge bubble of debt that is hanging over the heads of America's young people.
Yeah, I've read where we had the housing bubble in the last decade, that some people are warning that if we don't act on this, as you mentioned, that this could be the next bubble.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't act in the same way as the housing bubble would, but it certainly is a big drag on economic growth. So, you know, I don't think it's something where we're going to see, you know, like a bubble pop and suddenly people's housing prices go down. It's nothing like that, but it's more like this weight that the American economy is dragging along as it tries to pick up steam, but it can't because so many people have so much debt that they're just trying to get out from under.
And it seems like this whole student loan debt crisis that we're in is indicative of the price of college these days. The price of college has skyrocketed, and people have to take loans in order to afford college, and it seems like there's something wrong with the system we have in place right now in terms of higher education.
Yeah, I mean, the cost of tuition has gone up astronomically over the last 30 years. It's gone up faster than anything else, really. And so there is a big question as to what we can do to try and slow the growth in the cost of higher education. And I think that it's important to recognize that even if we solve this the student loan interest rate problem right now, that question is still going to be out there, and Congress and our leaders really need to focus on trying to figure out what we can do to stop college costs from growing the way that they have been.
And I know there have been some proposals. There was one by Representative Karen Ross out of California, where the bill talks about the 10-10 rule, where if you make student loan payments for 10 consecutive years and never reaching above 10% of your annual salary, then you can have your student loan obligation completed.
Yeah, so there's a number of proposals like that to try and help deal with the huge debt burden, because, you know, what you're seeing now is students have so much in student loan debt when they graduate from college that, you know, they're not necessarily able to go into the fields that they might want to go into. They may not be able to take the sort of risks, you know, start a new business. If they had wanted to do that, they have to find a job that's going to pay them a lot of money so that they can get out from under this huge student loan debt. So proposals like that are helpful because they tell people that, well, you know, as long as you're paying what you can afford to pay for 10 years, then, you know, you can go into the career that you want to go into or take the risk that start the new business that you want to start, because, you know, as long as you pay your fair share for 10 years, then the rest of the loan is going to be taken care of for you. And so programs like that can certainly help, but But, you know, slowing the overall cost growth of college is, I think, is key for the whole thing.
Even though there's more people going to college than ever before, you think the price of college would go down, but it's actually skyrocketed, even though there's more people enrolled than ever.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, what's interesting is that the cost of public college, so the tuition cost of public universities, has actually gone up a lot faster than the tuition cost at private universities. I think the growth in tuition at public universities over the last 30 years has gone up 257%, which is just outrageous. But compared to private universities, where tuition has gone up by 167%, and I think part of that is from all these budget cuts that we've seen, states having to cut funding to their higher education systems, and the schools, you know, losing that money, have to figure out what to do, so they have to raise tuition costs.
Well, and that's an interesting point, that one of the reasons is cut to state education funding. They've had to counter that with rising costs to higher education.
That's right. And unfortunately, you know, that's been the pattern lately, is that a lot of states, you know, with the recession and the huge budget shortfalls that a lot of states were facing, unfortunately, public education is one of the things that states turn to try and fill those budget holes, is by cutting funding to public education. And unfortunately, it just means that, in a lot of public universities, tuition costs are just going higher and higher for students.
Yeah, and I know one thing that I think the same bill had called for by Representative Karen Ross, mm-hmm. was stopping the accrued interest. That sometimes, you know, when a college graduate has graduated from college, say they have to take a certain amount of time to try to find a job or obtain a job, particularly in their field, or if not, that sometimes they get accrued interest if they apply for forbearance or economic hardship. During that time period, they actually get higher accrued interest, end up having to owe more. And one of the proposals is stopping this accrued interest penalizing people while they're looking for a job or going through a health emergency or whatever circumstance when they're not able to make those payments for that particular time period.
Yeah, so that's right. I mean, if you don't have a job and you're not able to make payments, unfortunately, that interest is still building up on those loans right now. And by the time you do get a job or make enough money to start paying down these loans, you could have added on a lot to the principal, and you might be paying a lot more over the long term. And what a lot of people don't realize is that student loan debt cannot be discharged the way that other debt can in bankruptcy. I mean, if whatever your student loan debt is, you basically have that for life. There's no getting out of it unless through, you know, these various programs that we're talking about today. If you declare bankruptcy, you can't do anything about your student loan debt. So, you know, the students or the people that have built up these large student loan debt, they could be dealing with that for their entire lives, basically.
And there's a myth out there that, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that if the borrower or something happens, if, let's say they pass away, does that debt get passed on to their family or spouse?
You know, I've heard that myth too, and I couldn't tell you what the correct answer is, to be honest.
Wow, and I think there's definitely something wrong with that when you're seeing people that did what their parents told them to do, did what their family told them to do, went to college, did the right thing, and then have to go 20, 25 years, or well into their 50s, still paying student loans.
Yeah, and there is a lot of people who are still today, old people in their 50s who are still dealing with their student loans. And like I said, you know, if you were a business owner, or if you go into business and maybe you take some risks and you leverage your business too much and suddenly you've got all this business debt, well, you can go to bankruptcy court and deal with it, or at least restructure it. Student loan debt doesn't work that way. If you've taken out a student loan when you were 18 years old, before you maybe really understood how this system worked, 20, 30 years later, you have some financial hardship, or maybe something happens, you lose your job, you're still stuck with that debt. There's nothing you can really do about it.
And if you go into default, it's just it could be devastating, because there's a lot of employers' job applications that ask, have you gone into default? And it's outrageous that if you go into default, it can impact you from getting a job that would help you to make those payments.
Yeah, that's actually a fairly new phenomenon that we're seeing a lot more now, that employers are doing credit checks on people before as part of the hiring process. And you know, that's really tough. If someone may have been victim to some economic hardship, was really beyond their control, they could have lost their job, they could have had some major health expense that drove them into default. And if you're right, if they can't get a job after that, then how are they supposed to pull themselves up? How are they supposed to get back on track?
Yeah, that's one of the things that I would like to see addressed, is that if someone goes into default, some way where that doesn't hamper them getting a job.
Yeah, and there are actually some states that are looking at that, and there are some states that are drafting laws to provide those sorts of protections for the unemployed. I know that where I am here in the District of Columbia, there's a law that was passed saying that you can't discriminate against someone who was unemployed, and you can't be doing these extra checks on people to keep them from getting jobs. But there's certainly a lot of places in the country where that's still happening, and there needs to be more legislation to stop this sort of thing.
And one of the things the president did was he took out kind of the middleman, the banks, with the federal student loans. Do you think that's had a positive impact?
Absolutely. I mean, that saved the borrower's money. It's also saved the federal government money. It saved taxpayer money, because before we were basically just sending money to the banks to administer these loans, when the Department of Education is able to do it much cheaper. And thankfully we're doing it that way now. And so the taxpayer is saving, and student loan borrowers are paying lower interest rates because of it.
Yeah, and it's an interesting topic that we definitely have to tackle as a country, and hopefully Congress will act instead of doing nothing. But Dave, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and breaking down this topic. And how can they learn more about the work that you're doing at EPI?
Sure, I would encourage all of you to go to www.epi.org and see all the research that EPI is doing. I also, in particular, would recommend going to our new website, inequality.is, to see how inequality is affecting you and your pay.
Wow. And David, it's been a pleasure, and thanks again for coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks, David.
And as our last guest mentions, this is something that the media, the politicians, or Congress knew what was coming, the deadline, July 1st, and yet only 13 new segments on this topic since late May. But yet they're worried about some so-called whistleblower who, where he is in the world, even though he didn't really blow the whistle on anything, because we already knew all the stuff that this guy released. The media will cover that, but they won't cover this crisis. Millions of people are affected by this. And just some numbers for you, over the next school year, there will be 7 million new student loan borrowers. 7 million. And that's in the next coming months. But we're about to head into a commercial break. You're listening to Inside Politics with David Califf. We'll be right back after this quick commercial break.
In a hole, a 300-foot deep hole to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site, because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have 3 times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with 3 times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. 2-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
This is a referral service. Calls will be routed to an independent referral insurance agency.
Do you know the number one cause of bankruptcy? No, it's not losing your job or running up credit card debt. It's not even divorce. It's medical costs. If you and your family don't have health insurance, just one serious illness or accident could be financially devastating. But now there's good news, really good news. A health insurance hotline has been established to provide health insurance for all Americans, even uninsured Americans with pre-existing conditions. Now anyone can get health insurance even if you have a pre-existing medical condition. I repeat, now anyone can get health insurance coverage. Call now for a free no-obligation quote on affordable health plans available to you. Again, this is a free hotline for anyone, even if you have pre-existing conditions. Protect you and your family from sudden unexpected medical costs. Call the free health insurance hotline right now at 1-800-841-2997. That's 1-800-841-2997. Call 1-800-841-2997.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income part or full time with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0777.
And you are listening to Inside Politics with David Califf, the show that covers the issues that affect you. And hope everybody's having a great, great Tuesday evening. And before we get back into tonight's show, there's been a lot about what's going on in Texas. And right now, today, there's thousands that are protesting in Texas outside the state capitol in Austin, Texas. Thousands out that are out there protesting another anti-abortion bill. We know it was defeated last week, but Governor Rick Perry and the Texas legislature have decided to come out and try to pass another, have another emergency session to try to pass it. And thousands are out there in protest. Rick Perry's trying to be defiant, but people have the right to protest. And this is just another example of why you, the American people, have the power. You have the power to change things. It was defeated last week, and it's going to be defeated this week. Whether Rick Perry likes it or not, people have that right to protest and fight back. But tonight, I want to continue our discussion on the Voting Rights Act. As many of you know, last week, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act was stricken down by the Supreme Court. And for our listeners, Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, better known as the Preclearance Clause, is where 16 states or parts of 16 states are under their jurisdiction, and they have a history of voter discrimination, voter shenanigans, and are under the federal jurisdiction where any changes to the voting process, whether it's redistricting, changes to the voting system, and the state have to have the final say, reauthorization of the federal government. And even though there's been countless examples of why we need this, including 50 years of progress since the 1960s and the Voting Rights Act, and not only that, 80%, as we mentioned on this show, 80% of voter discrimination lawsuits come from these areas. Come from these areas that are under Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, including over 100 cases of these states either being thrown out or stalled, or they quit after the federal government showed oversight. They didn't want to go through the process because they knew it wouldn't pass. It wouldn't pass the smell test. Even though there were all these examples, including in 2006, Congress, at the time, a Republican majority Congress at that, reauthorized it just 7 years ago. Reauthorized Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act for the next 25 years. And in more evidence the Supreme Court needed, in 2012, we saw voter ID bills struck down in states like Texas. And this isn't just about the 1960s. This isn't just about the Civil Rights Movement. This is about today, 2012, all the examples we saw of voter disenfranchisement. Not just voter ID laws, attacks on early voting, attacks on Sunday voting, attacks on your right to vote, attacks on same-day third-party registration drives. Down the list, record-long voting lines. I mean, you don't have to go back to 1965 to see why we need a Voting Rights Act. You go back to November 2 of 2012 to see why we need Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. And despite all this evidence, despite all these reasons, the Supreme Court voted 5-4 to strike down the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. In less than 2 hours, as we mentioned earlier this week, less than 2 hours later, Texas Attorney General pushed the voter ID bill, pushed gerrymandering and redistricting in the state of Texas. And it's the latest example, and North Carolina seems to be in the news for a lot of the wrong reasons, is North Carolina. North Carolina is pushing a large wave of attacks on right to vote disenfranchisement laws. One of those is pushing, as we saw those voter ID bills in 2012, another voter ID bill. And according to analysis by the state North Carolina State Board of Elections, one in every 10 voters, do not lack the required government-issued ID. And out of that one out of 10 voters, nearly a third of these voters are African-American. A third of them. And that's what the Voting Rights Act was all about, striking down these so-called, some of these bills that disproportionately affects one particular set of voters. And the North Carolina voter ID bill is one of those examples, because out of that 613,000 North Carolinians that could be affected by the new voter ID bill, over one-third of them are African-American. And over half of the citizens that lack the government-issued ID that would be affected by North Carolina's voter ID bill are registered Democrats. That's right. The voter ID bill in North Carolina would properly affect minority voters. And over, if you look at all the voters as a whole, over half are Democrats. And also would penalize young voters, who right now young voters voted substantially for President Obama, voted Democrat. It would penalize, according to this North Carolina bill, would penalize college students for voting. They're pushing a bill to raise taxes on families with college students who choose to vote at school rather than at home. This is trying to penalize college students from voting. Now, college students, what do they have in common? They don't vote Republican. So much like the voter ID bill, which disproportionately affects Democrats and minority voters, when you attack college students' access to vote, making it harder for college students to vote, you're only trying to stop people who don't vote for your favor, people who don't normally vote for you, from voting. And one of the other proposed bills that they're trying to push is early voting and same-day registration. Ending early voting and same-day registration. So North Carolina is a perfect example of why we need the Voting Rights Act. It's a perfect example of why we need the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, whether it's the photo ID bill, penalizing college students for voting, or ending early voting. and same-day registration. So those five Supreme Court justices that struck down Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, just look at what's happening in North Carolina this week as why what you did last week was not only wrong, it's against what we have as a democracy right here in the United States. But we're going to talk a little bit more about this topic. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we're going to break down what's happening in North Carolina, how they're trying to take away your vote and disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of voters. We'll be right back. You're listening to Inside Politics. We'll be right back.
Right now, I'm standing in a hole, a 300-foot deep hole to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have three times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with three times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1-10-13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. Two-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income part or full-time with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
This is a referral service. Calls will be routed to an independent referral insurance agency.
Do you know the number one cause of bankruptcy? No, it's not losing your job or running up credit card debt. It's not even divorce. It's medical costs. If you and your family don't have health insurance, just one serious illness or accident could be financially devastating. But now there's good news, really good news. A health insurance hotline has been established to provide health insurance for all Americans, even uninsured Americans with pre-existing conditions. Now anyone can get health insurance even if you have a pre-existing medical condition. I repeat, now anyone can get health insurance coverage. Call now for a free no-obligation quote on affordable health plans available to you. Again, this is a free hotline for anyone, even if you have pre-existing conditions. Protect you and your family from sudden unexpected medical costs. Call the free health insurance hotline right now at 1-800-841-2997. That's 1-800-841-2997. Call 1-800-841-2997.
We all have something we want to improve about our health. Look and feel younger, drop weight, or just feel better. 8.4 million people will complete what's called the E84 Challenge. Scientifically proven and a 100% money-back guarantee. Your goals, your body type, and your lifestyle. For as little as $267 a day, start your E84 revolution now. And go to share84.com or call 803-431-0775. 803-431-0775.
And you may find yourself living in a shotgun shack, and you may find yourself in another part of the world, and you may find yourself behind the wheel of a large automobile. You may find yourself in a beautiful house with a beautiful wife, and you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
And Inside Politics with David, the show that covers the issues that affect you. And today we're discussing North Carolina, the latest example of state that's trying to push voter disenfranchisement laws on the heels of the Voting Rights Act being stricken down, including pushing a three-prong attack, one requiring photo IDs that could affect over 600,000 North Carolinians, one a third who are African-American, over half registered Democrats, penalizing college students for voting, pushing a bill that would raise taxes college students who choose to vote at college rather than at home, including students, which would discourage college students from voting, and ending early voting and same-day registration, even though in North Carolina, African-Americans make up 9% of early voters, and 34% of voters who took advantage of same-day voter registration at the polls. And this is what the Voting Rights Act was all about, stopping these laws that affect one population from voting. And another example, are these Supreme Court justices blind with ideology? And joining me live via the phone is Mr. Lee Walter Jenkins, Democratic strategist. And hello, Lee. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Hey, Dave, it's a pleasure being here.
And it's a pleasure to have you on. And ending early voting and same-day registration, we saw record long lines last year that forced some voters to wait until 1 a.m. or later in some cases. It was so outrageous, especially in the state of Virginia, that by the time some voters voted, the election results were already done. We already knew who the winner was.
So the problem is that this has been tried before. Whether you have Section 4 and Section 5 or not, you still have the right to vote. And each state is supposed to provide adequate voting facilities and adequate time for individuals. This was not passed. The Attorney General will take it to court again, and again, it will be found illegal. First of all, they don't understand their laws. They don't understand that just because Section 4 and Section 5 was disallowed, caused Section 5 not to be in effect. It still has nothing to do with your original right to vote.
Well, and you're right. And one of the problems that we see with that in last week is that the Supreme Court justices that were against the Voting Rights Act said that there's no logical relationship between what happened then and the present day. Yet, I mean, we have example after example, including North Carolina, of why there is a relationship between the Voting Rights Act when it was passed and today, right now, in 2013.
Yeah, and of the Constitution. I understand that just because Section 4 was struck down has nothing to do with what's going on with them allowing citizens to right vote in a timely manner. That's already part of the requirements of your right as to be able to vote in a timely manner. So by them back trying to throw off to give themselves a shot, it's not going to work because the Attorney General is going to come to court again, and again, it's going to be thrown out. And it's not going to be done in time in the first place, so they can do it for the upcoming election anyway.
Yeah, and ending early voting in North Carolina, we know it's happened in some other states like Florida and Ohio where they had record long lines, particularly in Florida. Ending early voting, I mean, these are the same people that then complain when there's long voting lines in their states, like Rick Scott in Florida. Yet you were the ones that ended early voting that helped lead to those long lines. Maybe there wouldn't be long lines if you allowed for the early voting process.
And you know, at some time we have to realize that the individuals that are continuing to do this have mental issues. And then taking the information that you read and transfer it to a written document. Because this is a clearly unconstitutional thing they're trying to do. Clearly it was not. Clearly this has been voted down over and over again. They're looking at they were looking at the fact that under Section 4, states that were put on a special appointment because of their past history in voter as far as voting rights is concerned. So then they had it there. Anything that they had that they tried to do as far as concerned had to be cleared by Attorney General. But it has nothing to do with the fact that if you're going to do something that's illegal, it still can rule that it's illegal. So somebody needs to explain to them what happened and what they can and cannot do.
Yeah, and including ending same-day registration. And, you know, there's something wrong with these politicians and governors. You mentioned some mental issues. That instead of encouraging as many people to vote in our democracy, in our voting process, do anything to discourage and try to hamper the vote. I mean, this shows again who has the right policies. Because if you feel that you're on the right side of the argument, the right side of the debate, have the right policies, you'll want everyone at that right to have that equal access to vote. The fact that you're trying to stop millions of people from voting on election days shows that you don't have the right policies. You know you're on the wrong side of the argument against the will of the American people, and that's why you're afraid of everyone having that right to vote.
And every time, you know, there used to be a conversation with the media attacking the low hanging fruit. You know, that's what is happening. And that's about attacking the people that are most vulnerable. You know? And so, what they have done is have the low hanging fruit up the pathway to see. Because you're talking about working people who are going to vote with you, trying not to allow them to vote. And in their minds, they're fascinating most of the Democratic vote, but Florida shows you that that's not true. You are scaring so that most of them are going to come out and vote because they are voting out in groups to vote. That's going to discourage Republicans from coming out and vote.
And they're firing up the base in North Carolina, and it's only 2013. Now there's a statewide protest. They're being called the Moral Monday protest, and they're cropping up all over the state of North Carolina every Monday to protest not just these laws, attacks to unemployment insurance across the line in the state of North Carolina. You know, these trying to pass radical immigration bills, anti-abortion bills. They've really stirred up the people 1 year before it's not even election year.
And really, it shows you that you have people out there that have no understanding of how normal, everyday, hardworking people. They don't understand that we have a feeling of what is right and wrong, and that drives us to do things that we would normally do. You don't pick a reason to expect to back and allow these things to go.
Yeah, I think definitely in the case of North Carolina, all these governors that are in legislatures that are doing it, and a perfect example is Governor Rick Scott, who reversed a lot of these voter suppression laws and said he was embarrassed by what was happening. Well, you can't be embarrassed for the state. You should be embarrassed for yourself because you were the one that were pushing these things in Florida.
And you're against me, David. No, I don't. And yet, you're pushing and pushing things through. And it appears that care, they both like it a lot. All they care about is getting it done. So, are they worried about being selected to run? Are they already set up? Are they getting paid are getting funds from other places, so they're not concerned with getting elected or not. So who are there
And as you know, they're doing stuff that is unconstitutional, against law, and the case of this one, this bill of make tax penalties on college students that vote on an address other than that of their parents. So let's say they vote with the address of the college that they're at, and they can have state income tax penalties. That's unconstitutional, according to a 1979 case versus the United States. The Supreme Court affirmed a decision holding that a state cannot place unique burdens on college student voters that do not apply to others.
Okay. You understand what I'm saying? They are not representing the care. And the thing they do is to represent the people that are paying them to do the things that they do. This is not about people, and as because we need to wake up and realize we have a public servant there, and we have a person that's serving the private sector.
Yeah, they're not serving the American people at all, and I think this is also a message to the voters, the ones that are voting for these same politicians. I think they also need a wake-up call. Do you want to continue voting for politicians that are willing to try to attack one particular group or this particular group's right to vote? I think all Americans, we should all be outraged, and we should support these policies. It doesn't matter if there's an R or a D next to the name.
Yeah, but at the moment, they see it's not about, it's not impacting them.
They're not doing the work of the American people. Only, as you mentioned, the corporations, and this is just another example in the state of North Carolina. But Lee, as always, it's been a pleasure, and thanks for coming on and breaking down this topic. I'm sorry? Oh, thanks. And that's it for tonight's show. You can email the show at insidepolitics@theletteryml.com. InsidePolitics@theLetterYMail.com. Until next time, I'm out.